Hello and welcome to the BS History Podcast. My name is BS Dreyer, and whether or not those initials are fitting, I'll let you judge. Today's episode is gonna be a little bit about some really recent, which was published in the Journal of Military History, and which has a quite interesting patchwork of authors, I should say. It's a very interdisciplinary bit of research, among them Niall McKay from the University of York, who is actually a mathematics professor. And basically what they did, the authors of this article, is they looked at the Battle of Britain, which, for those of you who might not know, was or is rather the name that is given to the battle for control over the airspace over the British Isles in 1940 between the Royal Air Force on the British side and the Luftwaffe on the German side. Now, just to set the stage a little bit, in 1940 you've got Hitler and the Nazis pretty much having run all over Europe. They've invaded France, Holland, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, and they have of course invaded Poland beforehand, Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland. You know, pretty much all of continental Europe is now at the mercy of the Nazi war machine. They have pushed or begun the push into the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union is not yet, I should say, capable of withstanding the Nazi war machine. So things are looking sort of grim, to put it mildly. And Hitler and his military advisors decide that a strike against Britain is preeminent, because at this point, you know, that you've had the disaster at Dunkirk, and you know, British forces are not anywhere found on continental Europe, and if the Nazis somehow get a foothold on the British Isles, things look really bad. That's the logic, and that's why they pursued that course of action and engage in the bombings of London, which were basically terrorist attacks, you know, directed against the civil populace, as well as trying to dogfight the RAF in the air, and indeed also attempting to dismantle the British Air Force with their different bases getting targeted as well. However, things don't go according to plan. The Nazis never defeat the RAF in the air, and at the end of the day, the British forces are capable of reorganizing and eventually, after a long time, ready to re-enter into continental Europe, first Italy and then later France on D-Day. So anybody who's familiar with World War II history will have known about these events, and so I won't bore you with all the details. This new research is interesting because, as I mentioned before, among them, a distinguished mathematics professor is a co-author, and other people who worked on this bit of research, what they did was they put a bunch of possible outcomes into a computer, basically creating an algorithm, as far as I've understood anyways, on the statistics that historians have dug up about both the German side and the British side at the time of the Battle of Britain in 1940. What the researchers suggest in their article is basically, I mean, this is counterfactual history and, you know, alternative history, not really something that too many historians are too happy to work with, but I find it interesting nonetheless. But that should be mentioned and should be said. This is pure speculation and doesn't change any fact of history, but might make us a little bit better understanding what was at stake at the time. So that's why it's interesting, and what they found out, or what they suggest, is that if the German Luftwaffe had engaged the British RAF, Royal Air Force, about 3 weeks earlier than they did, things might have looked very different, because the RAF was, in the beginning, quite unprepared, and the Germans did have the element of surprise. And that is, you know, one factor which they suggest might have turned things dramatically in favor of the Nazis or the Germans. And another thing is the wasted resources on the terror bombing of London. While attempting to demoralize the British, it had the opposite effect, as is well known, and is something that quite often does indeed happen with this type of attack, particularly nation to nation, as opposed to an insurgency group or rebel faction or something like this. You know, you galvanize the public opinion against you and for war with that kind of action. So that was a miscalculation and a misstep in and of itself, but the resources, and these are statisticians and mathematicians, so that's what they look at, the hard numbers. The wasted fuel, the wasted man hours, the wasted pilots, the wasted planes on that whole endeavor from the Luftwaffe's side, you know, it eventually drains their capacity to continue the fight for the aerospace over the British Isles and lets the British win. Not because the British necessarily as such beat back the Germans and, you know, were able to, from one day to the other, sort of say, you know, gain control over the aerospace territory over continental Europe. They weren't, by any means. That took a lot longer. But it nonetheless sort of sealed the fate. And by that I mean, now you've got the British 100% in on the fight, and there is no way for Germany to win the war, a prolonged war, which is what it turned out to be. So, at the end of the day, as we know, the Germans made a lot of mistakes here, and the British did some really clever thinking, and, you know, really mustered up resistance quite fast, and had a lot of RAF pilots and new pilots in the air much faster than the Germans had counted on. But nonetheless, this research does have some issues. It's a fun idea that this little in a change of German tactics, the earlier start and the better management, I suppose, of resources would have mattered this much. I am critical of this idea, and I'm not alone. Stephen Moore, who is an expert on the Battle of Britain, says that this kind of thinking is problematic in terms of history, you know, basing what possible outcomes could have been on statistics is problematic for the simple fact that history is shaped by people. So looking at the hard numbers has merits in terms of determining, you know, backgrounds for how was things actually, what can we analyze about the situation in terms of raw numbers. That's one thing, but to suggest that tactics, had this knowledge been known to the Nazis somehow or otherwise, would have really mattered, that this was a purely military operation, sort of ignores a huge part of arguably why the Nazis and perhaps indeed that era's fascism in general is really terrible, is because the leaders of the Nazi party, most of whom were not military geniuses, you know, and I know Hitler fought in the First World War and stuff, but he was by no means on any level or, you know, scope of the imagination, a military genius. And to suggest that he would have listened, or that anybody else in the top of the Nazi party would have listened, is first of all doubtful, because they didn't throughout so many other episodes of the Second World War. And secondly, there was also a huge impetus from even from the military to see what kind of effectiveness the Luftwaffe had built up since basically, you know, being barely alive in the First World War as a thing, as a, you know, as an organization, as a tool of war. There had basically been no, you know, warfare as such, but they had built up the capabilities of it over over decades, and they were anxious to see what it could do. And a good way to measure that was the London bombings. So the idea that it was purely based on terrorizing the citizens of London is erroneous at best. And furthermore, the sort of propaganda that they were able to then publish back home in Germany about the exploits, about bombing London, the capital, I mean, that is a huge boost to German psychological standings and soldiers in Germany. So that also had a huge boost and was a boon for the Nazi war effort. So arguably, the tactics and strategies of the Nazi party, I mean, they didn't count on the British being that resilient. That's one misstep. But at the end of the day, even if they had counted on it, it's doesn't seem likely, to me at least, that they would have acted any differently. As Stephen Moore points out, you know, humans don't adhere to the laws of mathematics or nature or physics in the same way that algorithms and computers do. So it is not necessarily a reliable way to conduct historical research, at least not on its own. Now, that is part of dismantling that whole argument, but I mean, a lot of historians have seen the Battle of Britain as, you know, really a moment of reckoning in terms of what way the Second World War was going to go. Now, first off, had the Nazis been able to at least sort of incapacitate the British more effectively than they did, it would have taken longer before the British arrived on continental Europe. If the Germans would have had to land in the British Isles and, you know, fight on British soil, that story would have been a whole different mess, because the British were ready, they were much better prepared than the French had been, and there was just no way it was going to go as smoothly as it had gone in the rest of Europe. There were simply more weapons, just on a handgun level, the British had more weapons than any other country in Europe. They had more military capability than any other country in Europe, and fighting on British territory would have been a huge drain on German resources, arguably, possibly even bigger than the expedition into the Soviet Union turned out to be. Now, that's another factor. The Germans were fighting on two fronts, so they were also fighting in the Soviet Union against the communists. And while the Russians had yet to build up the capacity to really effectively go against the Germans, as we know, they relatively quickly did. And with the manpower and the rapid expansion of weapons manufacturing in factories in the eastern part of the Russian countries, or Soviet countries, I should say, you just had no chance of completely, you know, dismantling the threat from the Soviet Union, from a German perspective, within, I mean, a decade might even be too fast. And as we know, World War II didn't last that long. And similarly, even if the United States had just gone, you know, thrown the hands in the air and said, well, you know what, the British have to fight that fight for themselves on their own, the British Isles, good luck, it would have taken forever for the Germans to beat down resistance. And meanwhile, the chances of their massively overstretched resources crumbling on continental Europe would have been massive. And furthermore, even if the Germans, by some miracle, had beat the RAF and had decided, against all good rational thinking, to attempt to invade the British Isles, they would have had to deal with the Navy, the British Navy, at the time and for a long time after, actually, all the way up into, you know, the end of the war, the largest navy in the world, the most effective, the strongest, most destroyers, most warships, even at the height of the Japanese naval fleet or the American naval fleet in the Pacific, it didn't quite measure up, actually, in when you look at the raw numbers again. Partly because the British had been in the game for longer, so some of their ships were outdated and would have lost in a fight against, say, the Americans, who had more modern equipment at the time, or indeed the Japanese, who also had more modern equipment at the time. But nonetheless, a bigger fleet than any other, tied up also in colonial possessions and stuff. It's not as simple as just the biggest, but still, formidable foe. And the Germans had, out of all the belligerents, apart from the Soviet Union, the least impressive naval forces. The Kriegsmarine, the German Navy, the German naval force, was woefully unequipped to handle any kind of attempt at getting soldiers to the British Isles without interference and massive casualties inflicted on them by the Royal Navy of Britain. So at the end of the day, it was just an unrealistic thing to ever think that the Germans could take over the British Isles the way that Hitler fantasized about. And that's, again, you know, Hitler, he was a good propagandist and a good, you know, speech writer, speech maker, and a savvy politician, but not a military genius, and it shows throughout World War II history. And I think there is a slight danger in sort of attempting to paint this picture of the Germans, the Nazis, as ever capable of winning what they had set out to do. I mean, there was just too much resistance, both from within the occupied territories, from the Soviet Union, from Britain, from all over the place. I mean, there was even marked resistance within Germany and Italy, and to a lesser extent Japan. It was not much, but it was there, and any kind of stretching of resources would have basically enabled people who wanted to see the fall of the Nazis to exploit that, and so many people did, so many people. What the Nazis were able to accomplish was largely luck, and it could have gone a lot differently indeed, as this research shows, but my feeling is that, if anything, the Nazis were much more likely to have lost the war earlier. If the choices made by the neighbors of Germany and the US in particular, but certainly also Britain and France, had been a little bit more savvy in the years leading up to the World War, the Second World War, that is, then things would have looked a lot different today. But they weren't, and that's not the way things went. At any rate, I think painting this picture of the Nazis as super cunning or, you know, far ahead of everybody else gives them that air of mystique that draws some people in. I mean, I don't want to give too much emphasis on that kind of thing, but at any rate, I mean, the Nazis were, they weren't that clever. That's basically the gist of it. I mean, read enough about the top leaders of the Nazis and you quickly realize that, you know, you have a bunch of old World War One generals trying to do their own thing, reliving a Prussian Empire at one side, and, you know, futurists and modernists within the party, and you've got propagandists, and you've got people with weird mythology tied to ethnic this, that, and the third, and it's kind of a little bit of a mess in many ways, and it's not a coherent monolith. You know, Germany at the time, and certainly even within the Nazi Party, it was not a monolith. It was not all these people acting, you know, as the body almost of Adolf Hitler, and that was part of their undoing indeed. Had they had a more competent leader than Hitler and someone with a greater understanding of how to make everybody do exactly as he wanted, things could have looked different, no doubt about it. But Hitler wasn't that smart, the Nazis weren't that clever, and there was just no way that that project was going to work. It was a Hail Mary from the get-go. And I think a lot of the Nazis, particularly the ones with sufficient military experience, knew that. They knew that the British had the might of the empire, still largely intact at the time, behind them. I mean, they had the greatest territory, the greatest resources. It would take time for the British to mobilize, no doubt about it. But they had the manpower, and they had the material, even perhaps, potentially, the British by themselves could have won over the Nazis. It would have taken a lot longer than it did because of the help that they got from the Americans, and not to forget the Soviets, who sacrificed so many people for it, and it would have been messy for the British had they not had that support from their allies. But nonetheless, they could have won. In a one-on-one against Germany, you know, they would have probably won quite easily, really, had the Germans not been able to go into the Soviet Union and get raw resources from the Soviet republics like Ukraine and Romania and other places where they went quite far. Hungary is another example, and indeed the alliance with the Italians in particular also gave them a boon in the beginning, as well as Franco being on the sidelines down in Spain doing nothing also gave the Nazis a boon. But had they not had those factors, and had it really just been a one-on-one, Germany versus Britain, I mean, no contest, Britain would have won at the time, even though they weren't prepared, even if the British had been surprised by the Germans. And again, this is all contrafactual history and just a thought experiment, but that is my firm opinion. Even if the Germans had been lucky enough to see some sort of resistance from the British colonies against the project, against the war, you know, which they didn't really, not at least very much of it, had there been some kind of that, and had they been able to utilize it, the Germans, you know, maybe it would have taken longer. But still, the difference in resources and also just in sort of political standing in the world, and just basic, I mean, basic capabilities in terms of how many officers you've got and how many well-trained military personnel you've got, there is just no way that the Germans, with the Nazis at the head of it anyways, could have won. Somebody else might have been able to take Germany to a much stronger position. They might have waited longer, you know, had they waited 10 more years to begin, things could have looked a lot different. I'm not disputing that, but if you look at 1940, and you look at the two powers, Britain and Germany, against each other, I mean, no contest, pretty much every time, no matter what the factors. Take longer, or it could go, you know, ebbs and flows, and it would have been a tough battle, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. But no contest. And I think the Nazis knew this, and I think they largely went along with Hitler's and, to a certain extent, Goebbels and Himmler's ideas in these days, because they hoped to provoke a reaction the same way that the Japanese hoped to provoke a reaction from the Americans with the attack on Pearl Harbor and the subsequent invasion of, among other, the Philippines that were American possessions at the time. They, the Japanese, that is, hoped to provoke a kind of, you know, an acceptance in America of Japanese territorial claims, and they even wanted to leverage the Philippines and other areas in the Pacific as sort of bargaining chips to settle a peace deal with the Americans, which would have allowed them to continue their war against, at that point, the Chinese nationalists and the Chinese communists in particular, and would have helped them retain their empire. And I think largely the Nazis, or the smarter Nazis and their military sort of advisors and people within the German military and government in 1940 had the same kind of idea, the same kind of hope, that provoking Britain the way that they did and trying to really strike a blow and sort of petrify them, at least for a little bit, would have let them retain, among others, their territory. Maybe not, I'm not sure they even cared that much about France, but definitely in Eastern Europe, where they were getting so many raw resources, and they would have probably been loath to give up Norway. But if that had been a bargaining chip that they could have leveraged against, you know, keeping their possessions of Poland and the Ukraine, etc., they would have done that, and they would have also struck a peace deal with the Soviet Union, and from then on been able to build up more military capability and actually have a chance at their messed up project. That is not how things went. But at any rate, I do believe, even though I don't believe that the conclusions of this particular research about the Battle of Britain has any sort of merits in terms of, you know, trying to predict that the Nazis could have won Europe or any of those kind of thoughts, which I believe are just erroneous when you look at the overall factors across both resources and people and ideologies and thoughts and the lives of the people at the time in the different areas and stuff. There's just so many factors that, when I look at it at least, I don't see any way that it could have, you know, gone markedly differently than it did. However, it did provoke thought. So in that sense, the research was, you know, not without merit. It definitely, you know, puts into perspective what was at stake, and perhaps especially it puts into perspective how naive the British were, which we already knew that they were in their dealings with Germany, particularly under Chamberlain, who, I mean, a lot of bad stuff has been said about him and his reactions to Hitler, and warranted indeed. Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister in Britain before Churchill steps in and leads the country to victory, as the myth goes anyways. He was not alone, Churchill, by any means, but that's kind of, everybody knows that. But he was the figurehead, and he remains a symbol of that British resistance even to this day in Britain. In British history classes, the Battle of Britain is still kind of remembered as, you know, one part Winston Churchill's speech, you know, we will fight them on the beaches, and we will fight them on the sea and in the air, and or the marshes and the towns and the all the places, you know, that he mentions in that speech. So one part Winston Churchill's speech, and one part, you know, keep calm and carry on posters, and one part RAF heroics. And there is a certain truth to that narrative, but, you know, take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, while that was largely the case, the much bigger player in terms of the defense of Britain was the Royal Navy. And without it, the Royal Navy, that is, things could have looked a lot more dire for Britain than it did. But they had that navy, and there was just no way. There was just no way. Not as far as I see. But anyways, you can check out the article and the research for yourself in the Journal of Military History. And you know, see for yourself whether you agree with me. There are so many factors that you can argue these points, you know, from dusk till dawn and for 7 more days. As always, you can find me on Twitter at BSHistoryPod. That's at BSHistoryPod. And I want to thank you for listening.